Now, I hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving. We're going to jump right into our Christmas series. And this year, our Christmas series, we've entitled Prepare Him Room. And the inspiration behind that series title is from a very classic, well-known Christmas hymn that we sing this time of year. And that is the song, Joy to the World. In Joy to the World, the song starts by saying, Joy to the world, the Lord is come. And then it gives two commands. The first says, let earth receive her king. It's interesting, when Jesus comes as king, the physical earth is ready to receive him as so. There's a story in Luke 19 where people are worshiping Jesus as king, as the king and Messiah that they've been waiting for. And the religious leaders at the time rebuke these people and try to quiet them. And Jesus responds to the religious leaders who are trying to rebuke them and says, like, blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord. Like, if you silence these people from worshiping me as king, even the rocks will cry out. The physical earth was ready for her king. The second command the Joy to the World gives us is let every heart prepare him room. And so this Christmas, that is the question that we are going to ask ourselves. Are we preparing room for Jesus? Now, for some of you, that could be preparing room in your heart for Jesus for the very first time in your life. You've never trusted him with your life. In the book of Revelation, Jesus himself, he says, here I am. I stand at the door and I knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in. Jesus is not this sort of far away religious deity that, like, you got to figure out, you know, all the answers to get to him or clean up your life to clear the path to get to him. Jesus is saying, I'm at the door of your heart right now and I'm knocking. Here I am. I'm knocking. And it's a continual knock. Jesus is not something that is sort of out there to be found. He's actually here pursuing you. The trouble is that for so many, it's that the knocking of Christ on our heart is drowned out from all the other noise. Maybe it's drowned out from doubt. Maybe it's drowned out from you going, I gotta fix myself before I could really let him in. Or maybe it's because I gotta get all the answers before I let him in. Side note, if that's you, like, opening the door of your heart to him is an act of faith. Not certainty. So you'll never get all the answers. It's opening your heart in faith and by faith. But he says, if anyone hears my voice, not certain people, not religious people, if anyone hears my voice and opens the door of their life and their heart, I will come in. Not I might. I will come in. And so for some of you here, maybe this Christmas, it's time to prepare room for Jesus and open the door to your heart. For others, maybe it's preparing room for Jesus to do a new thing in 2026. Did you know that God is the God of new things, new seasons? In Isaiah 43, verse 19, God says, see, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Do you perceive it? I am making a way in the wilderness and streams in the wilderness. To prepare room for God, for some of you to do a new thing, you find is to, in finding yourself in the wilderness, whatever that could be, you know, maybe you're the one that's trying to clear the path. Maybe you're the one that's trying to start the new thing in your life and the new season. And if you're honest, you're not creating a lot of space and a lot of room for God to be the one who's preparing and making a way in whatever wilderness you may find yourself in. But he is the God who is at work, who maybe is longing to do a new thing in your life and in your heart. But are you ready? Are you prepared? And is there room for God to do just that? Everyone's busy. It's sort of the generally now accepted excuse that we're just never shocked to hear. How are you? I'm busy. I'm so busy. Hey, could we find a time to meet? I don't know. 3 weeks from now, maybe. After the holidays, maybe. And we don't really push back on that, you know, often. It's just sort of like culturally now, I think, a generally accepted reality that we just assume of everybody. But also we use it, I think, as an excuse to either not do things that we need to do, too busy for that, or meet with people that maybe we just don't want to meet with, too busy. Maybe I can find time for you later. To maybe sort of come up with reasons not to sacrifice, give, serve. I'm too busy. But here's what I've found out. Yeah, maybe we're busy. And maybe everyone's saying that they're busy. But the truth is, everyone finds time for the things that matter most for them. You do. I do. The things that are most valuable to you, you find time for. And I think this is a time of the year where we should slow down to sort of evaluate, like, what are ultimately my highest priorities? Look at how you spend your time. Look at how you spend your money. Look at how you spend your resources. It'll give you the answers very quickly. And I want us to sort of challenge ourselves this Christmas together as a church to prepare room, more room for Jesus, like that song Joy to the World calls us to do. I mean, think about it this way. With all that you have, you know, we're going to spend, all of us probably, money on gifts. And you're going to spend money on people you love, your friends, your family, your kids, your spouse. Here's a question to sort of reflect on this idea of making room. Like, have you made room financially this Christmas for money to go to the kingdom, to people outside of your family, your friends, your kids, your spouse, all the people you love? Like, when you think about your budget, you know, your Christmas budget, if you, let's just say, easy number, you use let's say you're going to do $1,000. Some of you are going to do less, some of you do more, but I'm just using that because it's easy to do the math. If you go, let's say it's $1,000 we're going to spend on Christmas presents this year. How many of us are sort of going, you know what I'm going to do intentionally? I'm going to prepare room for the kingdom in that. And I'm going to take 10%. I'm going to take $100. And that's not going to go toward gifts for family, friends, my kids. Instead, what I'm going to do in preparing room is I'm going to set that aside and I'm going to go, God, show me how to use this. Show me how to bless someone. Maybe it's a gift to someone else. Maybe it's $100 to someone that you just rent. You know, I don't know. But like, what if we all created room financially to just invite the Holy Spirit to say, use that for this. Use that for this person. How about your time? How many of us are going to spend the vast majority of our time with family and friends and the people that we want to be with at Christmas? Maybe 100%. What if we prepared room in our lives, our time, our presence, a chunk of that for people outside of our immediate circles? For some, this is the loneliest and darkest time of year. You know, even Tom mentioned, like, 25% of like Delano, and we represent more than Delano here, but 25% you know, are 55 plus. How many of those people are maybe celebrating their first Christmas after losing their spouse this last year? How many have maybe never been married and are lonely? How many of them maybe have family far away who are going to spend Christmas alone? What if we as a church tithed our time and our presence this Christmas, prepared room in our life to welcome in our neighbor, even welcome in the stranger? That's what we want to look at. How do we prepare room for Jesus and the kingdom in the midst of a culture that will try to crowd him out with good things? I love Christmas. I love everything about it. The lights, the music, the gift giving. I even like receiving gifts. You know, like, I love everything about it. And so it's not like, you know, but if I'm honest, like, sometimes, like, even like I think about Christmas, right before we're going to open gifts, we'll read Luke 2, and we sort of we'll read the story of Jesus's birth to get on to the more important matters at hand and the chaos of opening gifts, as if we're doing some favor to Jesus by sliding him and his story into the chaos of abundance when he really is everything. He is the reason we celebrate Christmas. And so are our hearts and our lives, is there room for him this Christmas series? So what we're going to do is we're going to look each week at different characters in this Christmas story, which happened over 2,000 years ago. And we're just going to look at some who prepared room, some who didn't. And what are the lessons and things we can learn from them to help us open our hearts to Jesus? So this morning, I want us to look at preparing room in our hearts for God to do the impossible. So let me ask you to take a second and just sort of reflect on what is your impossible? Could be so many things, but what are your things that you just go, maybe you've asked God for decades of your life in prayer and you haven't got that answer that you've been asking for, and it just feels impossible. Maybe for some, it's people in your life who you love and you just go, man, the thought of them coming to faith in Christ, like they are so far from God, like them becoming a believer, a follower of Jesus, impossible. And maybe you've given up hope and prayers of praying for their salvation. Maybe for some, it's reconciliation. You find yourself in divided relationships. Maybe it's with your family. It's over politics. We've seen that the last number of years, family being shredded because of politics. Maybe it's because of money. Maybe it's because of a decision. I mean, but there's division in your family, and the idea of reconciliation just seems impossible. Well, what is it? Name it. What's your impossible? And maybe it's decades prayers. Maybe it's most recent. But name your impossible. And my challenge to you this morning is to not give up on your impossible, because God is the God of the impossible. And prepare room in your heart for him to do the impossible. We're going to look at a story of God doing the impossible in an older couple's life. It's a story of Zechariah and his wife, Elizabeth. It's told in the beginning of Luke, and it starts in verse 5. In the time of Herod, king of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah. By the way, Herod is one of the characters that we're going to look at in 2 weeks. In fact, I was planning on talking about Herod this morning, but there's so much information about Herod. he was written about by Josephus and other historians at the time so much. It's fascinating, his story. So I need more time to dig into it. So 2 weeks, we're going to look at Herod. I've never preached in Herod. I'm looking forward to it. But he's going to be for us an example of what happens when you don't prepare him room and the cataclysm that can come from that. You know, spoiler, disturbed individual. And we'll talk about that in a couple weeks. But this morning we're looking at Zechariah, who belonged to the priestly division of Abijah. And his wife Elizabeth was also a descendant of Aaron. Both of them were righteous in the sight of God, observing all the Lord's commands and decrees blamelessly. But they were childless because Elizabeth was not able to conceive, and they were both very old. So we're introduced to these characters, Zechariah and Elizabeth. Zechariah is a priest, and his wife is no slouch either. She has pedigree. She comes from the line of Aaron, who was the first high priest. But Luke also commends them and says, these are holy and righteous people. These are people that follow God's commands. They're in pursuit of God. In some ways, they don't deserve the struggle that then he tells us. They've been unable to have a child. Which I know many of you here understand that, myself included. And I'm always a little nervous to talk, about infertility in sermons because I understand in some way, I don't fully, but I understand in some way because of my wife's infertility, like the pain, despair that comes with it. And there aren't always easy, fast, satisfying answers. But this story should give us all hope, regardless of what our impossible might be. You have this couple who have been unable to conceive. But also, they're old. They're beyond the stage of life where physically you're able to have children. It goes on in verse 8. Once when Zechariah's division was on duty and he was serving as priest before God, he was chosen by lot, according to the custom of the priesthood, to go into the temple of the Lord and burn incense. So Zechariah, high priest, he's one of 8,000 priests at the time in Israel. And for him to be chosen by lot, what that means is this was a sort of sacred practice of discerning God's voice in decision-making, and they would cast lots. And so they cast lots for which priest gets to go in, burn incense in the temple, in the holy part of the temple. It's a big deal. And Zechariah gets picked, and he gets to go. And so, to understand how big of a deal this is, 8,000 priests, most priests never in their lifetime got picked to do this. And so this is an extraordinary opportunity for Zechariah. And it goes on to say, when the time came for the burning of incense, all the assembled worshipers were praying outside. Like, it became this communal event that people wanted to participate in together because this is Zechariah's time. He got it. And so we're going to participate with him from afar to celebrate this amazing opportunity and to pray over him and so they stand outside and they're praying with him. In verse 11 it goes, the angel of the Lord appeared to him. Now Zechariah is in burning incense, standing at the right side of the altar of incense. And Zechariah responds, which is the most common response to people in the Bible coming face to face with angelic beings. He freaks. When Zechariah saw him, he was startled and was gripped with fear. But the angel said to him, do not be afraid, Zechariah. Your prayer has been heard. Your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you are to call him John. He will be a joy and delight to you, and many will rejoice because of his birth. For he will be great in the sight of the Lord. He is never to take wine or other fermented drink, and he will be filled with the Holy Spirit even before birth. He will bring back many of the people of Israel to the Lord their God, and he will go on before the Lord in the spirit and power of Elijah to turn the hearts of their parents to their children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the righteous, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord. So Pause there for a second. Zechariah's in there. He's burning incense. All of a sudden, there's an angel. He freaks, and the angel gives us an extraordinary message. And he says, God has heard your prayer. Now, this is really interesting to sort of reflect on. Some people go, well, Zechariah must be in there, and as he's burning incense, he's praying, and he's asking for a son. Now, other scholars don't think that's true. I sort of lean toward that prayer in that moment was probably unlikely. I don't know. You can ask him. I'll ask him when we see him in heaven. What was he praying for? I think he's probably praying for Israel, and because he's not like a young guy who they're struggling with infertility. He's older, beyond childbearing age. It's sort of like, real practically speaking, probably not praying and asking God for his son in that moment. Maybe, but we don't know for sure. But I think I can say with certainty, I would guess, that was a prayer that Zechariah has prayed. Maybe it was in this moment, maybe it wasn't, but my guess, had asked for God to do the impossible. Probably a lot. And either God was answering that prayer in that moment that he had just prayed, or think about it this way. That was maybe a prayer that he had prayed decades before in a completely different season of life. God, help my wife get pregnant. Give us a child. And what if, like, in this moment, the angel is saying, he heard you. He heard you 5 years ago. He heard you 10 years ago. He's heard you every time. And now he's about to answer this. To me, it sort of speaks to don't give up on praying for the impossible. Don't give up, because you just don't know when God's going to break through with that answer. Now, he's shocked. In verse 18, he goes, how can I be sure of this? I am an old man and my wife is well in years. There's a shock. Understandably, you know, so like, I am old. My wife is old. This can't happen. It's similar, and we're going to talk about Mary next week. Mary's like, how do you have a child without intercourse? You know, like, there's practical ways the world works here, but God is the God who writes all this, and he's Lord over all. Now, you know, I sort of, in some ways, resonate with Zechariah in this shock of this. You know, I shared with you guys a couple weeks ago, those of you who were here, my wife is expecting, and it's funny. There's a Jim Gaffigan. I don't know if you guys listen to him. He's a comedian. But he gets up on one of his shows and he goes, I became a father again. And people go, woo, they're clapping and excited for him. He goes, for the fourth time. And then there's just a couple claps. He goes, yeah, that one, the second one doesn't always get the same response. So we are expecting our fourth. And, you know, this is after years of infertility. We tried having a child right when we got married. I was 30, and we just couldn't get pregnant. Prayed, asked God over and over, years of praying. Got pregnant once, lost the child. Adoption was part of kind of our hearts, and so we went down that route. And if I'm honest, like, I had given up. I had stopped praying for a biological child. And honestly, both my wife and I got to a place where we were just at peace. This is the family that God has given us. And then we got news that my wife is pregnant. We have an 18-month-old. And then a number of months ago, my wife came to me and she goes, I was been praying. I just feel like our family isn't complete. And I go, I'm pretty sure it is. Pretty sure it is. And quickly realized, probably not a battle worth fighting, you know. I just said, well, okay. Why don't we just sort of go give it a few months and see what happens? And I was on a trip in Indianapolis with some of the other pastors at a church conference, and we had a break, and we went out. I went out, and I just FaceTimed my wife just to say hello and talk to her. And my wife, while we're on the FaceTime, she flashes a pregnancy test, and she snapped us up. It's actually pretty cool. She snapped a photo of my response in the moment, and I go, this is probably what Zechariah looked like. So, <laughs> 44 years old. Seriously. But Zechariah, you know, he doubts. And the angel says, you really don't know who you're dealing with. I'm Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God, and I have been sent to speak to you and tell you this good news. And now you will be silent and not able to speak until the day this happens, because you did not believe my words, which will come true at their appointed time. I find it interesting that, like, well, the angel rebukes him. And he's like, do you not understand who I stand in the presence of? I stand in the presence of the God of the impossible. And he sent me here to give you this extraordinary news. Then he rebukes him. Because you could be hard on him and go, if there's anybody who should be like open and ready and prepared for this, it should be Zechariah. He's a priest. He knows God. He seeks God. Like, he should be open to this. Not to mention, he knows the story of his people in Israel, Abraham. And, you know, like this is a miracle God's been doing for a number of times, opening the womb. He is the God of the womb. Like, you know, and we could be hard on him, but like, the truth is, like, I think all of us, like, when we're not getting answers or clarity, or it's been so long, we give up. And I think he'd given up. And he doubts. And I think, like, for those of you who find yourself in doubt, whatever that might be, like, take heart. It's okay to doubt. It's okay to even doubt big. But you can doubt and have your heart open to God and the work of God. The problem is so many people in their doubt close their heart to God. But it's interesting that he silences him. That's sort of the disciplinary action. And I wonder of all the things he could have done to sort of discipline him, he could have done there's got to be intentional reason behind it. And I just wonder if the discipline of silencing him, you know, fast forward to James, where it says, my dear brothers and sisters, take note. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. I wonder if part of what it means to make space for the impossible is to just be quiet. Let God be God. I'm going to leave you with three things, and they're hard. They're not easy fixes. They're not quick. But whatever your impossible might be, I would say this first. Keep asking for the impossible. Don't give up. There might be an answer to a prayer that you asked 30 years ago. Keep asking. And you might not see the answer this side of heaven. We pray like Jesus, your will be done. But keep asking for the impossible. If you shut off the impossible, God's not going to force it. Second is listen. Create room to listen to him. Because sometimes God doesn't give us what we want, but he gives us what we need. And are our hearts open when we think about our impossible to receiving from God his voice and the answer that maybe we need, even though we don't understand it? And the third is wait. And I hate this. I hate waiting. But wait. I think what can happen, Ben, you guys can come out as we close here, is when we ask God and we don't get the answer we want, One response can be we take control. Like, we take control of the situation and try to manage it, figure it out, kind of take things in our own hands. Or the second is when we don't get it as fast as we want, we just sort of, well, we give up on it. God must not care, God must love, God might not exist. You can go down a rabbit hole, but we give up on it. I think the answer is to faithfully wait. And when you least expect it, and it might be on this side of heaven, it might be on the other side, there's an answer. There's an answer. So we're going to stand. Go ahead and stand. And as you reflect on your impossible, what does it look like for you to create room in your heart for the God of the impossible? And we're going to sing Joy to the World to prepare room in our hearts for him this Christmas.